T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
10:02, welcome back to Inside the Clubhouse for Saturday, November 24th. I'm David Schuster. He is Bruce Levine. And Bruce, we have another special guest. I'll let you do the intros.
We do indeed. 32 years a Major League umpire, has been one of the top Major League supervisors for the umpires since then, working closely with Major League Baseball. All the big events, just came back from Japan for that All-Star Series between the American players and the Japanese players. My good friend and great baseball person, Larry Young, joins us in Inside the Clubhouse. Good morning, Larry.
Morning, guys. How you doing?
We're doing good. First, let's talk a little bit about that series. I watched a lot of those games from Japan, and the Japanese players were so precise in playing the right game and coming back and winning ball games and hitting the cutoff man and taking the ball to right field. They out-baseballed the American players. I know it was a great series and it's an exhibition, but I was intrigued by the fact that how well the Japanese players played.
Yeah, their fundamentals are real precise and they know how to play the game and they play hard and they wanted to win and our guys wanted to win too. We were staying at the same hotel and they did not like getting beat, I can tell you that. I was watching, of course, we had three of our major league umpires there, and I was also watching a lot of the Japanese umpires because our World Baseball Classic is coming up soon, and so I was kind of on a dual mission there, watching our guys and the Japanese umpires as well.
When you, Larry, the hot topics in baseball are still, umpires, and the concentration, it seemed more this year on strike zones than ever before. And can you talk a little bit about how umpires are graded as far as their strike zones and when they're talked to, when they're not, and the deception of the strike zone that's put up by the TV cameras and the distorted view of the viewer over a pitcher's shoulder rather than directly over home plate?
Well, occasionally I'll hear that umpires, major league umpires, aren't held accountable. And I laugh when I hear that because major league umpires are graded on every pitch and every play on the bases, every one. And if there is a situation where our umpires are going too far out of the strike zone or they're not calling enough strikes, which is rare, if there's a trend, then we'll try to correct it. But our guys are averaging almost 98% behind the plate as a staff. And that is hard to do. The hardest thing in officiating is to get behind home plate and call balls and strikes. And our guys are very, very good at. I think you hear a lot more about the strike zone now because on the bases, you really don't have a lot of controversy with replay. If we miss a play, and we're very accurate on the bases too, we're almost 98% on the bases. So that 2% is... You know, that's not bad. That's very, very good, and we're proud of that. So, I hear that all the time, and it's just not true. You talk about electronic umpiring, and I don't know if the machine can do as good a job as our umpires because we see some of the machines that malfunction during the game, and they lose several pitches during the game. And I don't know how accurate the system is.
It's tougher to argue with those machines too, aren't they? I mean, you're not going to be able to kick dirt on that machine and get anything across at that point.
I don't think the players are going to be happy with the machine either. So yeah. They'll probably, you remember a few years ago, Curt Schilling busted up a machine and I think it was in Arizona. He didn't like what the machine was showing. So, the players aren't going to be happy with the machine either.
As a follow-up to that, Larry, players work hard in the offseason. They go into the weight room. They look at tape. They try to get better. What is the charge for umpires in the off season as far as preparation, working to get better? Is there a are there grading that goes out to these umpires on things that they need to work on in the off season to be better umpires?
Absolutely. They get a evaluation mid-season. They get one at the end of the season. If there's anything they need to work on, it's shown in the report. And we're very specific on that. If there's something they need to do, we'll say that we want you to work on this, this, and this in spring training. So the big thing we want our guys to do is, first of all, get some rest, because it's a grueling season. And they're not home at all. So we want them to spend time with their family. And our guys now usually come in very good shape. We have some guys that need to work on that. But especially our younger guys are in very, very good shape. And they work out in the off season. They work out during the season. So the new generation kind of is very cognizant of being healthy.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Webb Ford. When searching for a great deal on Fords in Chicago, visit Webb Ford in Highland, Indiana. Larry, obviously Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, he's constantly looking to speed up the length of games. Good for him. I'm a big proponent of that myself. I'm just wondering what else can be done, what might be done going into this next season. I've been hearing now for a long time about the pitch clock in between pitches. Has that been adhered to? Will it be further adhered to? And what other implements can be done to accommodate maybe speeding up this game like the commissioner wants to have done?
Well, there's a pitch clock in the minor leagues and has been for the last 2 or 3 years. I don't know whether we're going to go to that. I haven't heard yet what the decision is. That'll probably be discussed in a couple of weeks at the winter meetings. So we're just kind of waiting to hear what comes out of it, and whatever comes out of it, obviously the umpires will adapt to it as we have the other changes. I know the commissioner really wants to cut down on the pace of the game and improve on that, and we're all for that as umpires. We're not happy standing out there for 3 hours, 3.5 hours either with a lot of downtime. So anything that can be done to improve that, we're all for it.
Is there a limit time that plays can be reviewed now? Is there, is there a 45-second? Is there a minute? I mean, we've seen the process improved, but not to the point where we still don't have sometimes 2 to 3 minutes on rare occasions where it takes that much time to be able to make a decision. What is the process when it comes to time of a review?
Well, we really improved on that. I think once a month to supervise the room in New York, the replay room. And we really have improved on the times. And I think our people that are major league umpires that go in there and act as replay umpires really are cognizant of the time in there. And then also we have a time limit on the managers being able to decide whether they're going to look at it or not. So that has helped a lot. And we're well under a minute and a half now on an average, and closer to a minute. And we've had some that were like 10 seconds of a review. I think we're getting much, much better on that. I know it's not entertaining for the fans to see two umpires standing there over the replay and for a minute and a half. It seems like an eternity.
How often, Larry, does it say we can't determine, therefore time's up, we'll stick with the regular call?
Yeah, that happens. That happens a lot. You can slow it down. You can have all the angles, and we have several angles. Our technicians are outstanding in New York. And they'll give all the umpires every angle that they need, and you can slow it down, and you have a major league umpire sitting there, and he has all those advantages, and you still can't tell. They're that close. So in that case, we'll stick with the stands.
Hey, Larry, I'm going to preface what I'm about to ask you by saying, first of all, that I'm a big proponent of the umpires. I think they do a fantastic job overall. Every now and then, the players seem to criticize a certain umpire. I'm not going to name any names here. How much does it bother that certain umpire when, you know, especially when the players do it to the media, how much does it bother you being the supervisor of umpires when these players do, you know, take pot shots at certain umpires?
Well, I don't understand how they're allowed to do that, first of all. You know, other sports don't allow that. And I really, it bothers me a lot. I don't know how much it bothers individual umpires. I've talked to a few of them. And
it doesn't bother Joe West, I'll tell you that much.
Well, after a certain amount of time, you develop a really thick skin in this business. And if you don't, you're going to have ulcers. So a lot of that, you just let it roll off, but some of it sticks. And then you worry about what your family reads and sees, and I think that's the hardest part. You don't want your family to see that, you know, your father is bad or he's incompetent or whatever, and it may not be the case.
Larry, we appreciate you joining us as always. Keep up the great work. Tremendous insight for our listeners as always, and just appreciate you know, your knowledge and your friendship all the time. So thanks a lot. Have a great holiday season. We'll talk to you soon.
Happy holidays, guys.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. That's
Larry Young, umpire supervisor, joining us in Inside the Clubhouse. David and I will be talking about the Hall of Fame and some Chicago interest in that, with names like Harold Baines and Lee Smith involved, coming up. 312-644-6767. Text at 670-11.
Yes, we encourage your phone calls. We're going to talk about the Hall of Fame. We still have some White Sox and Cubs topics that we want to discuss as well. You're listening to Inside the Clubhouse. 1021, welcome back in to Inside the Clubhouse for Saturday, November 24th. I'm David Schuster. He's Bruce Levine. Bruce, we're going to get back to the phone lines in just a second. We do want to talk about the Hall of Fame. The balloting came out. Some very interesting names and obviously some local names as well.
Right. Now this is the modern day so they rotate three times a year, 16-member committee voting on people who are not eligible via the baseball players. And that vote will take place on the regular baseball players in December, and it'll be announced in early January. These are for veterans, people that have been on the ballot and passed over for X amount of years before they come off of the ballot. And executives, managers, coaches, other contributors to the game of baseball. And this is called the modern era this time around.
But there's some interesting names. I mean, I think Mariano Rivera is a lock. Matter of fact, he might be unanimous.
Right.
I don't see him not being unanimous. Right. How do you not vote Mariano Rivera is not a unanimous pick to the Hall of Fame? And obviously, that doesn't happen very often. Roy Halladay is interesting. You know, only 203 career wins. However, dominant pitcher of his era, two-time Cy Young Award winner, and I hate to say it, the fact that he passed away, I think is going to, you know, I don't want to look at it that way, but I think it's going to help his chances of getting in to the Hall of Fame. There's some other good names. Edgar Martinez, this is his last time to be able to vote it in on this way.
Right, not on a veterans committee.
Right, 70% last year. You know, Bruce, I've always looked at, you know, at the Hall of Fame as, it's a feel for me. Yes, of course, I look at the numbers. That goes without saying. Right. But for me, Edgar Martinez, and when you talk about DHs, okay, when I think about DHs and the long history of that, I do think of Edgar Martinez as probably one of the best.
I know, but you know what? If you look at the body of work, and I mean, he won batting titles. He's probably won four. But he doesn't, you know, it's probably only 2,200 or 2,300 hits, maybe a little more. To me, he's in the Hall of the Very Good. He's not in the Hall of Fame because he was a great hitter. He wasn't a great run producer. You know, I think you and I differ on this one because he was a dominant hitter of his era. But as a DH and not a big run producer, I don't have him there.
Okay, well, Fred McGriff is what? What about Fred McGriff?
Run producer. Certainly never connected with steroids and hit almost 500 home runs. You know, an average defender at best, a part of great teams in Atlanta that went to playoffs, you know, 14 years in a row. I mean, he should have a higher consideration but it's so difficult for a lot of writers to discern between the steroids era home runs and the guys that purportedly were clean.
couple of pitchers talking about guys. I mean, Andy Pettitte had a very good career. I don't have him in my Hall of Fame.
He admitted to doing
steroids.
That's
right, human growth with him.
Had more career postseason starts than any pitcher in history.
Which helps his cause,
yes.
I guess. And, you know, obviously being from New York as well. But no, he's not in my Hall of Fame. Mike Mussina, another pitcher. Very, very good in his career, but I just don't feel him being.
Well, you know, he's got 265 wins. You know,
which is impressive.
Impressive. Never a Cy Young. 120 games, I believe, only his last season when he retired. You know, again, does he fall into the Burt Blyleven type level, who eventually got in, but it took him forever? Is he in the Jim Cott area, where he still hasn't gotten in with, you know, 280 lifetime wins? That's to be determined.
And then, of course, there's, you know, the names, you know, that are associated with steroids, at least associated, and you know, whether on or off the record, Barry Bonds, Manny Ramirez, Sammy Sosa. Still not getting my vote, sorry.
Yeah, well, you don't look at Bonds differently than those other guys?
As which guys?
As Sosa or Ramirez, who may have...
Barry Bonds.
Their whole careers impacted by steroids.
Barry Bonds was on his way to being a Hall of Famer before, and your point is well taken. Barry Bonds was a Hall of Fame player, was a five-tool player. Then he started doing whatever he was doing, and then his numbers just went like, you know, like tilt on a pinball game.
It ruined the home run stat.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
I think, you know, people are still mad at Bonds, not because he did steroids. I'm mad at him because of what you just said.
Because he tilted the numbers.
Because he ruined what most people considered the most impressive and the most elite number in sports as far as home runs, which was Babe Ruth and Hank Aaron, and then the individual year, which was Babe Ruth, and then, you know, it was Roger Maris, and then, you know, all of a sudden Sosa and McGuire go after it, and then they break that, and then Bonds hits 73 home runs. Nobody even talks about 73 home runs because it's gross.
That's a good adjective.
It's gross. And the way that he passed Aaron up by six home runs or seven home runs for his career is gross. You know, Bonds was one of the greatest baseball players I've ever seen. He was tremendous. And as you said, well on his way to being a Hall of Famer. But I think people are angry at him. They're upset with him. They're upset with Clemens because they were arrogant and they kind of ruined and skewed the real numbers of baseball.
They didn't need to do what they did, in my estimation, to eventually be Hall of Famers if that's what their goal was. Now, obviously, they stuck around.
You know what? Bonds, according to people I talked to, and I think they're very close to him, he was upset watching guys pass him up because they were doing it. And at some point he said, screw it. If they're going to do it, I'm going to do it.
That's exactly
and
what
he
happened.
Was so good and so talented that he became this superhuman baseball player that walked 230 times one year. Consider that. That hit 73 home runs. That had OPSs of 1,200. On base percentage of almost 500. He was just a robot.
Yeah, Bruce, let's sneak in one quick phone call before we take our final break, and let's go out to Beecher and pick it up with Jim. Go ahead, Jim. You're on Inside the Clubhouse. Jim, are you there?
He took a timeout and
he wanted to talk about the umps in the strike zone, but yeah. I guess he just he was on a pitch clock. I don't know.
He was. 20 seconds were up.
All right. Should we take one final break here? All right. Well, let's take one final break here, and then when we come back, we'll take more of your phone calls. We still want to talk about the Hall of Fame and what else.
Right. And the special committee where you have Harold Baines involved and you have Lee Smith, Lou Piniella. We're going to talk about that. Talk more about the Cubs and White Sox needs. Your calls always expected and enhances our show at 312-644-6767.
And coming up at 10:45, DePaul Notre Dame College Basketball later this afternoon, Northwestern and Illinois football. So stay tuned to The Score. We got a lot of good sports in store for you. We'll be back right after this. 10:34. Welcome back into Inside the Clubhouse for Saturday, November 24th. Our final segment here, we have DePaul basketball coming up against Notre Dame at 10:45. We have Illinois football later this afternoon against Northwestern. So lots of good sports right here on the Score.
Let me give you a quick synopsis of what's going on with the Cubs and Sox. Cubs are looking for bullpen help and a catcher, a backup catcher for sure. Also looking for a second baseman, infielder type. These are things that they're actively talking to other teams about. Bullpen is for both teams. The White Sox looking for bullpen help and a starting pitcher of a certain ilk, like a J.A. Happ. A lot of conversations with teams at the GM meetings moving forward to the winter meetings coming up 2 weeks from tomorrow, which I'll be at covering for The Score and 670thescore.com on our website. By the way, I write on the website every day, just about, sometimes four or five times a week in the winter time, and you can follow all our great writers and covering all the great sports in there. I know, David, you write on there sometimes as well.
It's interesting that you mentioned a backup catcher. Were they not happy with Caratini?
I think they felt Caratini was his game was not enhanced by backing up this year. If you notice, his hitting backed up quite a bit. Didn't have any power in his swing. I think they want to start him at AAA. And I think he's valuable to them at other positions. I think they want that real solid veteran backup catcher, a guy like Cervelli or somebody out there that can not only help the team, but maybe kind of push Wilson Contreras a little bit.
Well, he needs some pushing.
Contreras plays hard, and I won't always say that his game is where it needs to be. It was an off season for him as far as hitting. So I think they're looking for a more solid backup, somebody that can come in and catch two or three times a week if he has to.
You know, it's interesting when we were talking to Ken Rosenthal, and I 100% agree with him, where he said that Theo and Jed are always trying to be creative. And he did mention that, you know, the free agency route for going after either a Machado or a Harper is not likely. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. But both those gentlemen, meaning Epstein and Hoyer, know that they have to do something. They have to change somewhat the complexion, because this team just wilted it in the second half of the season. So that's going to be via the trade route. Now, he did also mention that maybe Happ or Schwarber are not going to get you something, but this is where the creativity comes in. Well, maybe if they package something else involved with those two guys, maybe they can get, and I love what you said a week or two ago, maybe going after the second baseman from Kansas City, who's a leadoff
hitter. They've had a lot of conversations about middle infielders with other teams. That's a priority for them, and it should be because of Russell's situation and Zobrist, you know, moving on in age. I have no doubt Zobrist will come back in top shape, be ready to play 120 games, but are you going to get optimum amount out of him at 120 games at second base? Is that what you want? Is he still going to be rotated around in the outfield positions, which is likely as well? But you got to come up with a top-of-the-order hitter, somebody that you have a contract control over for a while. The Russell thing has you can't be – you can't be sidelined by that. You must look past Russell and say, we're going to let him rehabilitate here. We're going to let him come back. But if it doesn't work out, we're going to be ready to move on without him.
And it's not unprecedented, and I think I'm correct in saying so, that you can trade a player even though he's on suspension.
Yes you can.
Okay, so
I don't expect it to happen.
Nor do I. Nor do I. I think other teams around Major League Baseball, when we're talking about Russell, will want to see if indeed he's rehabilitated before they make a commitment.
I mean, you know, his on-field production hasn't been good enough.
No, it hasn't.
It hasn't said, I'm a starting position player. His defense is always... You know, his range is as good as anybody in baseball. It's documented. His arm is below par. He has trouble throwing overhand, and he's worked hard to get that under control, but he's still not great with that. He's probably a second baseman with somebody else the rest of his career.
Which is what you and I have been saying now for how many years?
Well, you know, I think he is. And at 25, there's still a lot of ability in Addison Russell. But that might not be realized as a Chicago Cub.
All right, let's take a couple phone calls before we have to get out of here. Let's start up in Wisconsin, Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Go ahead, John. You're on Inside the Clubhouse.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I heard you talking about starting pitching there, and I'm reading about the Giants thinking about making some changes. I don't think anybody is off the trading block from San Francisco as they try to rebuild. I wonder, would the Cubs think of Madison Bumgarner? He was fantastic for a few years, but he seems to be kind of sliding down. Wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I think he's got contract control for a couple of years left. And he had an injury plague season 2 years ago. Last year wasn't as great as it normally has been. The Giants are probably in the rebuild mode, so they would probably consider trading Bumgarner, but they're a mess there. They have a strong fan base, much like the Cubs, used to drawing 40,000 people. Ownership has not committed to a total rebuild yet, but they should have done it a couple of years ago.
And the Cubs have committed so much money, obviously, to their starting pitching staff that I just don't know if that's a direction they're going to go. Now, I'm not saying that
he would probably fit in more with the White Sox if they can get him on a longer-term deal.
All right, let's take another phone call before we get out of here. Lamont and Mark. Go ahead, Mark. You're on Inside the Clubhouse.
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're good.
How come there's two scenarios I think the Cubs should go after? One, what about trading Happ or Schwarber to Seattle for D. Gordon, who could either play second or center, and signing DJ LeMahieu?
Those are good suggestions. I think LeMahieu is going to be on a lot of people's radar. Former Cub, second-round pick, traded for Ian Stewart in an ill-fated trade by the Cubs front office, one of the few bad ones they made when they came in. And he was an all-star, David, a couple of times. Won a batting title, I think, 2 years ago. So you also have to try to project his numbers outside of Coors. He's not a home run hitter, even at Coors. He's a line drive hitter. So can you take 8 home runs, 55 RBIs, and be happy with gold glove defense at second base?
I got to think about that one, to be honest with you, Bruce. I'm still
those are going to be the numbers.
Right. No, those will be the numbers. But, you know, is that what I ultimately want?
Not a leadoff hitter. I mean, he's a second. He hits second a lot.
Number two hitter.
But, you know, again, take him out of Coors. And, again, you know, he's a line drive hitter. He's still going to hit. But is that the answer for you? Or do you need a more athletic type? That's going to bring some more to the party for
That's you. What I'm looking for, and you have sat next to me in press boxes for so many years, and you know I'm old school when it comes to this. I believe in a leadoff hitter in baseball who gets on base, who's got speed, who can make things happen. Yes, I know Dexter Fowler did not have all those qualities. However, his on-base percentage was really damn good with the Cubs.
He was their energizer. And for
You go,
for,
we go.
People talk about Madden and Davey Martinez. They got more out of that guy than any team has, and Fowler has not played a lot of games in his history, but he played enough games to be impactful for the Cubs and a number of, you know, for the important years, especially for the World Series year.
All right, well, I anticipate that you will not only see big news at the winter meetings upcoming in a couple of weeks, but you will break big news also.
Okay, you know what, if I don't, I'll make it up.
Sure, why not? I really feel like the Cubs and the White Sox, specifically the Cubs, I think the Cubs are going to do something at these winter meetings, and I think it's going to be more in line of a trade.
All right. My partner, Matt Spiegel, will be back next week. Matt had the weekend off here, so look forward to that. David, thanks for stepping in. It's always fun doing the show. We do it 162 times a year during the baseball season. We do it on the air often as well. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. Also follow me writing on 670thescore.com, Cubs and Sox, 4 or 5 times during the week during the offseason.
And we want to thank also our guests this morning, Ken Rosenthal, and also Larry Young, supervisor of umpires. I want to thank also Zach Withers, our producer and co-pilot. I thank you, Bruce, for allowing me to sit in with you. I look forward to doing it somewhere down the road. You will be at the winter meeting shortly. I'll be all over the place. Cubs, White Sox, Bears, Bulls, Blackhawks. Look forward to
take a day off once in a while.
Well, once in a while, I'll do just that as well. But again, I wish everybody a very safe weekend. I hope you had a nice holiday, and we'll talk to you very shortly.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.